Hey.
Oh, hey, man. Where you been? I haven't seen you for forever, man.
I've just been sitting here thinking.
Yeah, what have you been thinking about, man?
Well, I've been thinking, you know, sometimes the things you really liked when you were younger turn out to be just big piles of shit that you then revisit and find out, Jesus, that's a huge pile of shit. Not only does it reflect badly on the people who made it, or the time period, but also who you were at the time that you were watching it, you know?
Yeah, man, that's like a real bummer, man.
You should never traumatize a woman sexually. I should know. I'm a medical doctor.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the shortest late seating. I'm Jason Harding.
And I'm Steve Shives. Here we go.
On this show, we take a movie with no fucking plot, and we're going to submit this. Guys, I swear to God, this is going to be the slow. This is going to be the shortest movie. This is going to be the short. We've always said which one is going to be the shortest review we ever do. We might be sitting on it right now. This might do it because I. Ooh, you'll find if you watch it, you might be all, yeah, how are they supposed to, you know, do the plot for this one? The movie we're going to review this time around is Slacker, right, Steve?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Slacker. Which rhymes with cracker, which are the only people in this movie.
Nicely done.
Thank you. It is Texas.
Nicely done. And it is also the least favorite movie of the principal from Back to the Future.
Shut the fuck up. Shut up. Hey, Steve, do you have any trivia? Please tell me no. Please.
Actually,
in order for us to make an hour, please tell every bit of trivia that you have for this fucking movie.
I did find some trivia, but man, it was a struggle this time.
I bet it was.
There's just not all that much interesting behind the scenes trivia about this movie. At least not that I could find. But here's what I have to offer. Here's my offering for trivia for Slacker. Okay, so
trivias.
The entire film has only 163 cuts in it, which is far less than average for a film of this length. Lots of long shots.
When half the time you're staring off into space, beating your head, going, "Make it stop, big." You're not noticing the editing all that much.
You're not really paying attention to how many cuts there are.
Really, no.
You're not. It's not like you're sitting there watching it, going, "I bet the average shot length of this is a lot higher." No, okay. Richard Deloney, who is the guy who plays the conspiracy theorist in the Batman T-shirt,
Deloney.
The guy who says we've been on the moon since the 50s, that guy.
The paranoid guy that everyone's trying to run away from, yeah.
Yeah, he's where he was offered $200 for the Batman shirt that he wears in the scene. I don't know if he took the offer, but he should have, because whoever made the offer was an idiot.
Oh, well, this is going to be a good review.
I just wanted some priceless Slackers merchandise, or Slacker merchandise.
Slacker.
Slacker. Singular. Very important.
Singular.
Many of the actors in the film are musicians from Southeast Texas.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that makes it better, doesn't it?
Including Teresa Nervosa of Butthole Surfers.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Orrell and Abra Moore of Poi Dog Pondering. And who could forget Whammo, real name William Walker.
Whammo.
He used to make those air guns.
Uh-huh.
And then he transitioned into acting and music. The film, as I think we all know, was a major influence on and inspiration for the American independent film movement of the early 1990s.
Why?
Kevin Smith specifically credits Slacker. Because it was cheap. Because they realized, you can make a movie for almost no money. Let's all do that.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Smith specifically credits Slacker for inspiring him to make Clerks. And the film's success made it easier for other indie filmmakers to secure funding and distribution. So if nothing else, we can thank it for that. And finally, despite being thought of as one of the definitive artistic portrayals of Generation X, Director Director Richard Linklater is not actually a Gen Xer.
No, he's not.
He was born in 1960, which means he's a baby boomer.
Fucking poser asshole.
He's
dickhead.
A baby boomer. He was in his late 20s when he made the film, so he was slightly older than most of the characters.
He was in late 20s and in college. What does that say about his character?
That he was confused and he was trying to figure out what to do with his life.
That's right.
So anyway, that's all the trivia I have.
God damn it, you needed to make it last longer. Jesus Christ.
Those were the interesting bits. Those were the most interesting bits I could find. Although usually you can find shit like, there was a fight on the set or something caught fire or two of the actors hated each other or like, no, nothing.
It stars fucking no one.
It stars no one. Nothing happens in it. They shot it on the street.
Mm-hmm. I suppose I'm reacting as I should, that a boomer made a movie about Gen X and I'm rejecting it. Fuck off. All right, it was directed by Richard Linklater, and you know him. He made movies. He actually made one of my favorite movie series, the Before series,
the Before trilogy. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Before
he's
Sunrise,
made some good movies.
Before brunch, before breakfast, before whatever. It's an interesting thing because they do them about 10 years apart, so you get to watch these people's, progression. It's interesting take on a romantic film. He made Boyhood, which was people agreed to do that. Okay.
that's a commitment. Somebody made that commitment.
At some point I'm gonna call you, and School of Rock, which I don't remember all that well.
I remember liking School of Rock.
I remember liking it too, but not like, oh, I love this so much I'm gonna commit it to memory. That Jack Black, oh, what a talent. I remember it was on.
He is quite a talent though, that Jack Black.
Written by Richard Linklater between bouts of masturbating to his own intellect. I'm in a bad mood. And produced by Richard Linklater.
You're not telling lies. I'll stop you if you tell a lie.
starring Richard Linklater. He's the first person in the fucking movie.
Yes, he did. For no matter what you think of this movie, for better or worse, he definitely sets the tone for the movie in that first scene.
And here's the best part of this movie. Every single person that I'm going to read has been in nothing. They've done nothing. They've gone nowhere. Ruby Vasquez as Taxi Driver. Mark James as hit and run, son. They're named after words they said, dialogue. They don't have names. You get it? It gets better. Bob Boyd. Oh, no. Officer Bozio. He has a name, I guess. Terrence Kirk as Officer Love. Stella Weir is Stephanie from Dallas. Good God. Teresa Taylor is Pap Smear Pusher. Mark Harris is T-Shirt Terrorist. Frank O'Rall is Happy-Go-Lucky Guy. Notice how they all have names like their background characters? We'll keep going. Abra Moore as Has Change. Lewis Black, not the fun one.
Not that one.
Some obscure asshole as Paranoid Paper Reader. Sarah Harmon as Faith in Groups. John Slate as Conspiracy A Go-Go Author. Lee Daniel as GTO. Charles Gunning as Hitchhiker Awaiting. True Call, it's what it says. Louis Mackey as Old Anarchist. Scott Rhodes as Disgruntled Grad Student. Kim Krizin as Questionable Happiness. Athena Tiskari as Cousin from Greece. Kalman Spelletich as Video Backpacker, and Kendall Smith as Postmodern Paul Revere. Fuck me, fuck you, fuck movies, fuck everything. All right, here we go. Cinematography by Lee Daniel, who's also worked on Boyhood and Dazed and Confused. Edited by Scott Rose. Nothing. Distributed by Orion Classics. I'm glad they don't exist anymore. Just for this. Fuck you, Orion. Fuck you. I'm glad you put some money in it, but god damn it. Everyone is putting money into the independents. They're desperate for the independents. Come save the movie industry, independents. Who do we get? We got this asshole, and we got Kevin Smith. The only one good out of the bunch was Quentin Tarantino. And that was it. God damn it. Why? Release date, July 5th, 1991. Running time, 97 minutes. Here's how big of a movie it was. Budget, $23,000. Box office, $1.2 million.
That's more.
And then I told that talentless hack that he could go and make movies, and I inspired Kevin Smith to go make his drowning in his own goddamn intellect movies. Steve, goddamn it.
Yes, sir.
I don't. Okay, you ready? Is everybody ready for the recap?
Let's go to Austin, Texas, circa 1989 when this was shot.
And let's just wander around Austin and recap the plot to Slacker, Steve, please. God, please.
Okay.
Jesus, please, God, make this not my life anymore. Can we stop this? I mean, I swear to God, I'll do something. I don't know. Do you want me to dedicate my life to Christ? I'll do it if it means that Slacker doesn't exist anymore.
That's the only proof of God that I will accept. Make Slacker not exist anymore. Yeah, let's travel to Austin.
Okay, because we're trying to not make the show 15 minutes long, and it's going to be 15 minutes long. There's nothing we can do.
There's not a lot to talk about in the movie.
So we literally, okay, if you guys want to know how much fucking navel gazing is in this, we open with a dude in a taxi. That dude is Richard Linklater.
That's the filmmaker. That's the director. Yeah.
Talking to the taxi cab driver about a dream he had. If you guys know that there is anything less boring than someone telling you their dream, I don't know what it is, but you sure as fuck don't put it into a movie unless it comes true later.
Nobody wants to hear about your fucking dreams.
Unless your name is David Lynch. Then I want to know all your dreams.
Yes. Then tell me every dream you've ever had. And then David Lynch would just go, no. And then that would be the end of that conversation.
That's it.
But yeah, so Richard Linklater plays a guy. He gets off a bus. He gets into a taxi cab. He tells the cabbie about this dream he had that is this dream about fucking nothing, about how he dreamed about the theory of the multiverse is basically what he dreamed about how every decision you make branches off with all the other things you could have possibly done happening in their own universes. Mm-hmm. Like, he drones on about this for like 10 minutes while this poor taxi cab driver.
Can I just recap it? Yeah, I'll just recap it. People say dialogue written by a stoned college student. The end.
That's pretty much the entire movie.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. A minute, 2 minutes. I remembered. And like, it all came flooding back. Like, I had suppressed the memory of this movie. I came rushing back after I watched the first two scenes, and I went, oh, no.
Oh, it's just this.
No, just this.
It's just 90 minutes of this.
It's just this. And I rolled my eyes into my head about a minute in, and they never rolled back out again.
Yeah. I will say, I think the guy who plays the cab driver gives the best performance in the film.
He doesn't do anything.
Because he just drives that fucking cab. He doesn't listen to a word this dipshit in the backseat is saying. Mm-hmm. He's just like, it's a fare. I just got to drop him off where he wants to go and get the money. That's all I need to do here.
So then he goes down, and then a guy hits a woman.
Gets hit by a car, and then the car drives around the block and pulls up further down the street, and it turns out the car that hit the woman was driven by her son, and we follow him up into his apartment, and we just watch him kind of fuck around in his apartment for a little bit.
Yeah, and then the cops come.
And then the cops show up and take him away. And then the camera,
there it is,
the camera,
the sigh. We're only 2 minutes into doing this movie.
Because it's tough to think about what it, about what happened next, because I know, like, from that point on, from the guy getting arrested for running over his mom with the car, which is like the only remotely interesting event that happens in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing happens in the movie. It's just people talking. Mm-hmm. The only event in the movie is this woman getting hit by a car, and then it turns out that it's her son. There's like this little mini drama in this one scene, mm-hmm, that isn't even that interesting, but at least it's something happening, and then nothing happens for the rest of the movie.
Nope. We follow a bunch of dickheads walk from one situation to that. We follow a different person. It's like you follow one person to one thing, and then you switch characters and then you follow them to another thing.
You follow them to wherever and they're then, going. Yeah.
And then they interact, and then that person leaves and they interact with another person, and they and here's the thing, they're not interactions. There's someone talking about something fucking stupid about something,
about whatever is on their mind. Yeah.
Whatever's on their mind. They're weirdos or whatever. They're mostly college students. They're mostly college age students. I hate the fact that they're saying, oh, this is about Gen X. None of these people. Oh, I'm reviewing the movie already because I wanted to be done. I wanted to be done. So anyway, I mean, we basically let's describe the whole fucking movie.
Let's try to talk about some of the characters. I don't think we might not. So after the guy gets arrested for running over his mom, at some the next one is the moon landing guy, right?
I guess
the guy with the Batman shirt.
The conspiracy thing.
I mean, they're all kind of conspiracy theorists if you think about it. But like the guy, there's a guy walking down the sidewalk and he's talking to some of his friends about something in a cafe.
They're strangers because remember they're trying to get away from him. Oh no, that's right. Yeah, he's
talking to people. He gets up to leave, and then this guy in the Batman shirt follows him out. He says, "Did I hear you mention such and such to your friend in there? Well, you might be interested to know." And he just starts like,
"And here's the thing, reeling off. Recognize the guy. He's the creepy 45-year-old that's still in college. He's the creepy 45-year-old that hangs out at the AV lab or at the quad or whatever, and his whole life." Is picking up on college age girls, or at least trying to, and his hair is obviously dyed, and he's like 65 years old. I know exactly who he is, and no, that's not who he's playing in the movie. That's who he is in real life.
That's who that person is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like the one thing I noticed is at least his conspiracy theories are relatively positive. Like usually a conspiracy theorist is like, well, that didn't happen, you know, like they're negative, and it's like, oh, you think we landed on the moon? No, we didn't, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. This guy, it's like the opposite. He thinks not only did all this stuff really happen, but it's even more amazing than you thought it was. Not only did we land on the moon, we landed on the moon in the 50s, and there's lunar bases, and Neil Armstrong saw aliens when he was there. And it's like his, you know, it's still full of shit, but it's full of shit in like a way that makes the universe feel larger instead of smaller.
That's the thing, is he's an obvious psychopath.
Well, that's, you said you, I mean, he reminded me of a guy that I used to kind of know. Although, unfortunately, the guy I used to kind of know was not on the positive side, but it was what he was a mentally ill person who needed treatment. Mm-hmm. And I say that not to make fun of him. I say that in all seriousness. He was a mentally ill person who needed treatment and didn't get it. He was a guy back when I used to work at a truck stop. That was like the last real job I had. And usually once a year, this guy would pass through and he would be traveling through the area, and he would just show up one day and kind of end up hanging out around the truck stop for most of the day until he caught a ride somewhere else. And I never got his full name. His last name was Bridges. And he was one of these guys who would like show you a page from a magazine where he had circled random words that he thought was like a deeper meaning. You know, and if you learned how to read it, then you could tell like what the government was planning to do and stuff like that. And this was like immediately post 9/11. So he was like fucking firing on all cylinders. Like he was seeing, you know, beautiful mind patterns and fucking everything.
Do you see what we're doing? We're talking
not talking about the movie.
A friend that you had in school. And not the fucking movie.
And but he reminded me a lot of this guy of this, you know, of Batman t-shirt guy. And it's a disorder that requires treatment. It's like it's a paranoid delusion kind of thing. And he was a perfectly pleasant guy. Like, he was a nice guy and we didn't mind having him around, but everything that came out of his mouth was horseshit. And he was imagining the world in this way that it just wasn't. And that's this guy in the movie. He's just following this following this random stranger around, telling him all this shit that the guy didn't ask about and clearly doesn't care about.
You know? Then he follows these kids to an apartment. Someone's moved out. They go through pictures of the person that moved out and talk and about some bullshit.
There's like postcards that have a story written piece by piece, you know, on the back of each postcard. And
then a lady leaves. Apparently she's come back from someplace. She meets a friend, and then another friend comes up and tries to smell them the pap smear, supposedly from Madonna. Okay, see,
how about that?
Isn't that great? Then dude leaves, and then we swap partners mid-stride. A woman is warning her about, I don't remember. I don't care anymore. I don't want to do the movie anymore, Steve. We're just wandering around, going from person to person, and we meet these people, and we go into their lives briefly, and then we leave. Right? There's some kids beating up a Coke machine at some point, and people standing by a bridge. It's an overpass. I don't know.
Yeah, there's an and apparently the guy like had a bad experience with his girlfriend or something, and his friends are trying to talk him into like throwing a typewriter into the river, which will somehow like cleanse him of this experience. Or, yeah, I don't know.
Then a woman goes into a bookstore and meets a nerd.
Yeah, a nerd, like a JFK conspiracy theorist, which is the worst kind of nerd, by the way. The worst kind of nerd. The kind of nerd that nobody should ever be nice to. A JFK conspiracy theorist.
Someone's fixing a car, and they're parting out a car, and then they're driving in a car, and then there's a guy wandering around again, another guy wandering around the streets again, and then he meets a... What, an old man? No, then we're with an old man. Remember the guy with the blue shirt? What was he talking about?
Yeah, was this the old anarchist?
Yeah, the old anarchist.
A guy comes in. He's in, like, I don't know if it's their house or a bookstore that they own or something. There's a guy, he's in the building, and he's got like, and he's looked like he's rooting through stuff, like trying to rob them, and he's got a gun. And the old anarchist comes home and he's like, oh, give me the gun, son, you won't need that. And he like takes the gun away from the guy, and then he says, let me tell you every fucking crackpot idea I've ever had about everything. And they go for a walk, and this old man just kind of talks just a lot of shit about anarchism and politics and how, like, the guy who fucking assassinated, what was it? The guy who assassinated President McKinley was an anarchist and was like, and had the right idea. And fucking Charles Whitman, they point to the tower at the university where Charles Whitman committed that awful act of mass murder. And this old fucker says, I'm just sorry I wasn't in town that day. I missed it. The best day in the history of Austin, when Charles Whitman committed a spree killing from the tower of the university. You know, so yeah, we
follow
happens.
A guy around. We just follow a guy around. They follow a guy with a black tank top. They get in a car. I don't know what happens. They like switch places and they drive off, don't they? Yeah, they get in this big old yellow Cadillac and they drive off, and then they meet. Somehow we get the video guy. I don't know. I think this is like one of the first big. Oh no! One of the guys in the car goes to the video guy's place, and the video guy has TVs everywhere. One of them is wearing a TV like a backpack.
He has a TV strapped to his back. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something about he wants to have TVs like running all the time. Like there's some kind of weird like pseudoscientific thing that he believes about having TVs on everywhere that will do something for him or something.
And then we cut to them literally watching a video. We were in a movie where they're watching a video of a guy on a computer talk about horse shit. And then the guy with the cowboy hat goes to another place where a lady is doing something. What is she doing? She's putting like stuff out to sell on that great big green AstroTurf thing. I can't remember. But then she leaves. They follow her. There's scenes of people eating and smoking and drinking. And this ain't no fucking My Dinner with Andre. These are the boringest pukes on the entire fucking planet. Arrogant college age assholes just talking whatever. And then somehow we wind up in a Volkswagen bus. They're going somewhere, right?
Yeah. This is the girls getting a ride from the guy driving the bus, and then they get dropped off. Like, or they're going to a party that the guy says he knows someone from the band and he can get him into without having to pay the cover charge, but he's not on the list. Nope. And
some of the girls ride up on a bicycle. Right, remember that?
Right, the girls that they meet outside the party, two of them, and one of them is like an exchange student or something.
Cut over to a band or somebody playing music on a fucking night vision camera, and I'm like,
a pixel vision, a Fisher Price pixel vision, which is literally a toy video camera from the 80s.
Yeah, and we're in a club, and then we're out of the club. And then someone slept with somebody. I don't know anymore. Then there's an old man recording his voice as he walks down the fucking street.
All by himself into a tape recorder.
Oh, yeah. This is the next morning. And then we have... okay, so here's the thing. This character appears... This character, the guy with the speakers on top of his roof, who's just talking to a microphone broadcasting them. So that happens in this movie. Where he's just talking about basically conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And it's some long-haired dude.
Yeah.
Linklater has made three of these kinds of movies. He's made three of them. Or maybe two of them. Because Waking Life is exactly like this, except it's the bullshit animation that he claims to.
Yeah.
It's the same fucking thing. It's just wandering around. Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In that one, the person in the car driving around with the megaphone on the top is Alex Jones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess Richard Linklater thought, oh, he's harmless.
What a kooky local character. What a little bit of local color from Austin. He's harmless. And
we go from the guy who is doing the loudspeakers on top of the car, and we cut to some people. And we pan over. Okay, so he's at a stoplight, and there's a car full of kids with handheld video cameras, right? Like Super 8s. And now we cut over to their footage until the end of the fucking movie, where they just shoot each other without any sound. They go to a fucking public park. One of them throws the camera off the cliff. We get that footage. The end. You missed nothing. End of movie. I'm just going to say it. This is the most pretentious, like every college film I've ever seen. This is every single one of them. And someone looked at that and went, he's the future of Hollywood. Well, thankfully he's not. Steve, what did you think of Slacker?
I feel like we're mostly in agreement on this. I will say, I didn't hate it as much as you did, but all of the things I liked about it are technical. Mm-hmm. I think knowing what the budget was and knowing the relative experience level of everybody involved in it, this is a really well-made film. The cinematography is excellent. We made fun of it earlier, but I really like the long shots. I like the long takes of following people around and sort of eavesdropping on their conversations. The camera work is really well done. The editing for the most part is really well done. You don't really see like the awkward edits in this like you do from a lot of low budget like independent films made by inexperienced filmmakers. Mm-hmm. Like just on a technical level, I think it's very, very well done. And I can see why on that basis people could have seen this and seen something in Linklater and said, oh, if this guy had, you know, a bigger budget and access to a more experienced professional cast, let's see what he could do with that. Because it's one of the smoothest, most polished pieces of low-budget guerrilla filmmaking that I've ever seen, really. So, and it seems like it would have been very technically demanding, because a lot of these are like walk and talk scenes, but a lot of the choreographed camera moves, like, clearly took some planning and needed to be executed with some skill. So I appreciate that about it. I appreciate the fact that, given the fact that almost everybody in this movie is a non-actor, the performances are not that bad. Mm-hmm. With that caveat, like this, if you got these kinds of performances from actual professional actors, it would be unacceptable. But from people who aren't generally actors, I think pretty much everybody does at least a passable job. And some people do a pretty good job. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a very dialogue heavy film. There are lots of long, involved speeches, and the actors all seem to handle it very well, at least in mm-hmm. terms of getting the words out, not sure. so much in terms of performance.
All the actors in this fucking suck, and I hate them.
The main flaw in the movie, and we've mm-hmm. mentioned it a bunch of times already, and it's, yep. I mean, it's the main flaw in the movie, and it comes up again and again and again, and it's that every character we meet is a variation of the same type.
No, it's every character we meet is Richard Linklater.
It's everybody is a conspiracy theorist or a pseudo philosopher mm-hmm. or just someone who thinks they figured something out that the rest of us haven't, and they want to share.
I mean, here's the thing.
Yeah.
When I watched this, and every time someone talked, I literally said, nobody talks like this. Nobody sits there and unless you're a little high and you're in college.
Yes.
Unless you're a little high and you're in college, the rest of the time, nobody talks like this. But this whole world in this movie is populated by these fucking weirdos who just, you know, feel free to talk about whatever they don't want to talk about. No fear of how people are going to judge them. I'm like, maybe that's just Austin. It's just so quirky. And it's not. It's just bullshit. Top to bottom, this whole movie is full of bullshit. There's more bullshit in this movie than there are in an Avengers movie. God damn it.
It's not. You're right. It is lack of fear. But it's also, and I noticed this. I was a non-traditional college student. I didn't start college till I was 25. So sure. I was a little bit removed from like mm-hmm. campus culture,
stuff.
Right? But I noticed this about a lot of the people I went to college with. At least the ones like these characters, the ones who had something to say, the ones mm-hmm. who had thoughts on things, you know,
they have an opinion.
Right? There's the assumption based on absolutely nothing that whoever you're talking to in any situation cares about what you think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, that's just a really dangerous assumption to have when you go through life, and also an arrogant one.
And you know, this movie makes that assumption from the
over and over beginning. Again, over and over again. I mean, most of the scenes, and you mentioned this earlier as well, but most of the scenes involve one character just kind of holding court mm-hmm. to someone else.
Yep.
And the other characters listen with varying degrees of interest. And look, one scene like that.
I do have an opinion about that, by the way.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Yeah. He could only write monologues. All the dialogue leading up to and after the monologues, they're superfluous. Some of the worst dialogue you've ever heard. Hey, John. Hey, Jimmy. Oh, I heard you did that thing. I did. Let me talk to you about how important Gilligan's Island is.
Yeah. What? Exactly. I have a good 5-minute hunk about Gilligan's Island.
Launch into how the different characters on Gilligan's Island represent different types of our culture. No.
No.
It really a no. lot of these scenes, a lot of these scenes, it really does feel like Richard Linklater watched Gilligan's Island one night while he was stoned and then read some Nietzsche and thought, these two are similar. And he wrote like a bullshit thing about it. And then he just shoved that into some character's mm-hmm. mouth. And that's and there's a scene in the movie.
So one of the things that I really don't like being tagged on to Generation X or to this generation of independent filmgoers is that they are highly referential to their culture, right? You can mm-hmm. say that about Kevin Smith and Quentin Tarantino and this movie. They're all very referential about the culture, and I hate it because it means, okay, so you just... Because there are times, even with Quentin Tarantino, when they start talking like that, I go, okay, I can hear Quentin Tarantino talking. This doesn't sound like a 45-year-old hitman somewhere.
Exactly. This isn't Vincent.
He's usually pretty good at finding which character can talk like that and the others can fuck right off. Yeah. Right? So anyway, yeah. So this movie, keep going.
I know. Yeah. So it's repetitive. It's that. It's just variations of that scene over and over. And you know, if you write that scene once in a movie like this, that's fine. Even twice in a 90-minute movie, you can probably get away with it. But it's nothing but that over and over and over again, and mm-hmm. it just gets old. Yep. And it doesn't help anything that it's not always clear what the film's attitude toward these people is or what it wants us to think of them. Mm-hmm. It mostly seems positive. Look at these, you know, what a bunch of characters these guys are, you know,
Whoopee! Like
it
mostly. There's some plot. But, yay.
But at times it feels like it wants to lean into satire a little, or it wants to kind of make fun of these guys. Like with the conspiracy theorist in the Batman t-shirt mm-hmm. or some of the stuff that the old anarchist says, like when he says like, oh, Charles Whitman was a hero, or Charles Whitman, mm-hmm. that was the greatest day. And they like, that sounds like a line that we're supposed to laugh at, or we're supposed to think this guy is a little nutty, because like what rational human being would say that? But because of the performance, because of the limitations of the actors, who are amateurs and who are doing the best they can, and given their skill level and, you know, their capabilities, they mostly, like I said, do a good job, but they're so preoccupied with remembering their lines that they don't really have any bandwidth left to give much of a performance.
Nope.
So
they just stand there or walk and talk.
Yeah, and that's all they do a good job at that. But the problem is, when you're delivering dialogue that maybe the audience is supposed to receive ironically, mm-hmm. you need to do something in your performance to kind of impart that. And these actors are not good enough to do that.
Oh, and here's the other problem I have with this whole exchange is when someone launches into one of these goddamn monologues, the other person is in shot and they're not reacting to a fucking thing they have to say.
Yeah. They don't seem like a person actually listening to someone else talking to them. They're just standing there just waiting for the other person to get through their lines.
Mm-hmm.
And probably hoping that they can nail it this time so they don't have to take this over again.
Man, please, let's not do another take. We can't afford more film, please.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it's very well made on a technical level. There mm-hmm. are parts of it that I admire. But it creates this impression of the city of Austin as this place where you can't walk down the street without being accosted by a gregarious eccentric with something very important to tell you. And mm-hmm. that's not a place I would like to visit. And
or just bored kids or just whatever they're showing.
Yeah. And yeah, it's pseudo philosophy and stoner wisdom and, you know,
I'm done.
Go for it. Your turn.
Now, some of you might be saying, but you guys liked true stories, and that's just people wondering. Yeah, but it was funny. It was well written, had a point.
Yes.
Didn't really have a plot. It had a little bit of a plot for us to follow. My big thing here isn't, oh, there's no plot. My big thing here is I can clearly hear the filmmaker. And it doesn't matter who these people are. It has no, you don't give a shit about a single person in this movie. It doesn't matter who's delivering the dialogue. It's like you could have switched them all out and you could have put whoever you wanted so long as they were saying the lines. This is someone who's in love with whatever they wrote. And they're going to make sure that everyone says it. Oh, I love what I wrote in this. And I love this one. And I love this one. But they're not really terribly good at the people interacting with one another. No one contradicts anybody. No one says, you're full of shit. No one says, get away from me. No one says, you wait, that man's a killer. And you just said that to me on the street? No. No one gets thrown out of a place because of their fucking ideas. Yeah. You just kind of watch it. And then it's done. And you hear the director patting himself on the back. When I did such a great movie. And apparently, if you were stupid, you watched that movie and went, I can do that. And that's what Kevin Smith did. He did the same fucking black and white copy, black and white movie. What was it? Filmed in on a fucking convenience store near his house.
Mm-hmm.
Filled it with so many fucking bullshit. And it was kind of like, I don't remember even what the plot. What is the plot? What is the plot to fucking Clerks? What is the plot?
Clerks?
Yeah.
Dante comes in on, he's not even supposed to be here today. And then remember, and he wants to break up with his girlfriend because his ex-girlfriend from high school is back in town and he still loves her. And then also another girl that he dated is dead and they want to go to her funeral. So that's also a thing that's happening.
So at least that one had a little bit of a plot.
I think, look, if we're talking about Clerks, I think Clerks is a way better movie than this.
And then if you go by the original ending, he gets shot.
He gets shot, but thankfully Kevin Smith changed that. That was
no, he saved
ending.
That for the third one, right?
Well, he was like, oh, okay, I'll kill him now.
Uh-huh.
So that his obsessive fan base will be like, please stop asking me to make more Clerks movies. Can we just be done now? I did one and it was like, I don't want to keep doing this.
The next one's going to be Clerk. He's going to run out of weed. He's going to have to make another one. I'll make Clerk babies or whatever.
What are you spending the money on, Kevin?
Bullshit. Nerd crap. Who knows?
Yeah.
Oh, but we're talking about
anyway.
Slack. I mean, in this one, it's you just hear all of it, all the pretense, all the horseshit. It's an unnatural movie, right? I don't care how much money you had to make it. I don't care if you're shooting it, but to have something happen that means something, have an interaction that means something. All that this feels like is, okay, I'm going to monologue about this because I think I'm clever. Mm-hmm. Here's my monologue about that. If there are weird characters in it, they're accidental. But I mean, here's the pap smear scene. Two people meet. They go, hey, how you doing? I'm fine. Oh, I thought you were going here. No, a woman. A person walks up. They talk the same way. How you doing? What's going on? Oh, by the way, I have Madonna's pap smear. Do you want to buy it? No. Okay. Bye. And that's the scene. Mm-hmm. What was funny about the scene? Oh, Madonna's pap smear. So funny, apparently, that they put that character on the poster.
That's the poster character.
That's the poster character. But nothing happens. There's no conflict. No one says, you're full of shit, and that's icky. Whatever's in there, I don't want you to bring it out again and show anybody. It's fucking gross. We're just talking, and you walked up, you weirdo. Nothing like that. The characters just kind of wander off. Distracted by some shiny object as they walk off, and then we exchange characters again, and you're kind of like, where is this going? Why do I care? Why am I watching this? Who are these people? What is the fucking point other than a college student standing on top of the hood of his car with a camera jerking off, going, look at me! Look at me and my great big ideas. And here's the big problem with Linklater. He never got over it. He never got over this. He did it again and again. He's done it, I think, twice. I think it's twice. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the other one is, but I know I've seen another movie that's exactly like this. And then I saw another one that's animated that's like this called Waking Life.
Yeah.
And maybe when he's out of ideas, he does this bullshit. He's like, I have so many ideas, I'll put them in this movie. And he doesn't write them out. He just writes the plot. Here's the thing, and here,
Well,
you keep that.
didn't he do, I know we both talked about it on the show when we saw it. Wasn't Apollo 10 and a half his too?
Yes, he did.
And
Yes, he did.
there are parts of that movie that I really like, but there are also parts of it where it's like, this dude is just telling me shit that happened to him as a kid. I didn't
Yes,
ask
that's
about any of
it.
this.
That's it.
Like,
Is there a plot? Nope. Is
yeah.
there
And
anything
some
going
of it
on?
is
Nope.
interesting, but there's a lot of stuff where it's just like, did anybody care about this? Is this just some
No.
shit that he wanted to get off his chest?
It's just something that he cared about. This is what I was doing during the moon landing. And sure, it may be honest and all that other stuff, but unless there's something going on, why do we care? Oh, well, he's breaking the boundaries. Breaking the boundaries with what? It's like listening to your aunt tell you a story about people you don't know, and the story is something like, well, then Sylvia went to the grocery store and everything's fine. And I'm like, why am I sitting here listening to this other than
Why
I'm
do I
being
have to hear this?
polite? I'm being polite to you right now. I didn't need to hear that story. And then my dog kept licking and licking, and then he stopped. Fuck, wow. Thanks. That's what this movie is. It's being trapped with your weirdest uncle who won't shut the fuck up about Ed. And you just have to sit there and you have to take it because you respect your elders. And there was the one time that he helped your mom with that thing when they were in high school. And you can't treat him bad. Otherwise, you're never going to hear the end of it from your dad and from your mom and from your grandpa and grandpa. You just have to sit there at the kids' table with a grown fucking man who goes on and on about moon landings and all this stuff and what he did in college and this, that, and the other thing. And you're just like, please shut the fuck up. That's this in movie form. Except we have long interstitials between people talking of people walking around. Now there is a thing that happens when you're in college, when you're a movie maker, is that you tend to fall in love with the moving image. And you want to take that, you want to put it in everything. You find beauty in everything. But the audience doesn't. And that's when you become a filmmaker, is when you decide, okay, they don't need to see this guy walking nowhere for the next minute and a half to 2 minutes.
He doesn't even get any place.
Right.
Like,
I mean,
least have
here's
him
the
show
thing.
up somewhere.
These could have been, you watch the person, oh, thank you, and they walk away, and as they're walking away, the next couple is walking past them, and you just follow them. Right? Quick, easy, on the street, fast. This one is, okay, bye, and then they walk. And you get to see so much of the poor section of Austin, and you're just like, what is happening? And they stop at a crosswalk, and they look both ways, and they walk across, and they walk, and then all of a sudden they're inside, and you're like, oh, okay, what's happening? It's like the dude with the cowboy hat. 1 minute he's in a car, and the next minute he's at somebody's door, and their house is full of televisions. And you're like, you just gave up now. You're just like, you don't care. So did I like it? No. Did I like Now here's the thing. I told people on Patreon that I stopped watching this movie about 20 minutes, 35 minutes in. And I called Steve and I said, I don't know if I'm
Yes, you did.
finishing this movie because I fucking hate it. And I've now seen everything that this movie has to offer. And I said, maybe by the time we review it, I'll have seen it, but I don't know what the point is because it just keeps going on and on like this. So to let Steve know, let everyone know, yes, I watched the rest of the movie, but I didn't watch it twice. This is the first
Because that's usually what you do,
time that I didn't watch the movie twice because I don't think I could bear it. I don't think I could bear watching this movie twice. Because I already saw what it gave me everything I needed in the first viewing. So why do it? So, Steve, recommend or not recommend? Slacker! What a fool, Slacker!
Not recommend, and I want to mention this as well. This is the first time that I have actually gotten a social media message from one of our listeners
Yeah.
complaining about the movie. On it's on Threads. I'm on Threads, and
Oh boy, what'd they say?
someone threaded me. I don't even know what
I
the
know.
terminology is, but
Stitched you or
and
whatever.
yes, they stitched me,
They did
and
me.
they said, And they said, regarding Slacker, what the fuck did you guys make us watch?
I'm so sorry.
I just want to say to that listener, you bear responsibility for your own choices. It is your life. I am not in charge of your life. Jason is not in charge of your life.
I do tell them to see the movie if they want to see
That's true. That's yes. But so anyway, yeah, that's the first time we've watched some rotten fucking movies for this show. Yeah, but and it's this the first time was, I've actually had someone. Why did you make us watch this?
This one has a lot of first short review. Number one. Number two, broke my rule about watching something twice. I almost didn't finish it. And we've watched some dog shit for this show. We really have.
Oh, we have. Absolutely.
And I've still managed to watch it twice. I watched whatchamacallit twice. The fucking Western movie with... Ugh. I keep wanting to say Lonesome Dove. It's not Lonesome Dove.
The one with the Kris Kristofferson one.
The Kris Kristofferson one. We both liked it for our memories.
Where all those animals got killed.
Hey, Steve, hitting our heads with hammers worked. We can't remember the name of the movie.
We can't remember the movie. Oh, God.
Even though our audience is screaming, Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate, screaming it at us.
Heaven's Gate, you idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have watched some. I watched Geely twice. Mm. And Geely was not good.
No.
But this broke me. This was like, here's the thing. Geely was bad, but had the structure of a movie. This is bad and expects us to just accept it. It's just accept the structure of the film.
I guess part of it is it's a taste thing, and I think you and I have this in common. You've compared Slacker a few times to the director jerking off.
Yep.
Which I think is the perfect way to say it. I feel the same way about it. And when I get that sense that whatever I'm watching, whether it's a movie or a TV show or whatever it is, if I get the sense that what I'm seeing is just the artist jerking off, mm-hmm. I immediately lose interest.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that will just kill my attention span right away. When I realize, oh, there's no point to this. There's not going to be a twist or a turn or a deeper meaning. This is just this guy or girl or whoever. This is just the artist jerking off. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be here for this. You know, like I'm not involved in this. This didn't need an audience. Here's
the thing. There's a movie that I love, that Steve loves, we both love. It's the first movie we ever reviewed on this show, which is My Dinner with Andre. Which is just two people talking back and forth to one another. But here's the difference. And you can say, oh, well, that's just people saying ideas. It is, except they disagree with each other.
Yeah,
there is a back and forth between the two characters. There's a disagreement. It's not just it had Richard Linklater directed My Dinner with Andre. You know, it would just be Andre.
Andre would have just been talking nonstop,
talking and walking out, and you know, leaving Wallace Shawn there and walking out and talking to someone on the fucking sidewalk, and no one counters him and no one argues with him, and that's the main difference. That's what Slacker has. Yeah. It's just people fucking talking and the other person not even saying mm-hmm. Just like looking at him.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I like movies where characters have opinions. I like movies where characters have ideas. I like movies where characters have things to say. Mm-hmm. But if the movie is just going to be characters just, you know, saying whatever bullshit comes to their mind.
Yeah.
To a passive audience.
Then go to an old age home. Go to an old age home, because that's all you'll hear all the time. And then Johnson did another thing that I didn't like. And it's like, no.
You said that the problem, and again, I agree with you about this. The problem with the movie from our perspective is not that it doesn't have a plot.
Yep.
I can name all kinds of movies that either are not plot driven or don't have much of a plot or are completely plotless.
Yep.
Like, I mean, My Dinner with Andre is a good example. I really like the movie of Secret Honor, which is literally a movie of a one-man show about Richard Nixon slowly losing his mind and recording this this endless monologue into a tape recorder about this weird conspiracy theory he has about why his presidency ended, blah, blah, blah. It's purely just an actor delivering a performance. There's no story per se. There's no plot. It's just a riveting performance.
Yep.
And I really like that movie. Completely plotless, but you have an actor giving a performance as a definable character.
And the dialogue is fascinating, and the topic is interesting. These are just walking, it's like walking up to someone and they're babbling on about some fucking bullshit. You don't know who these people are, you don't know what's going on, because when you enter into Secret Honor, you're entering with some foreknowledge, right, of who the character is, who's talking. In this one, people just walk up and go, "Hi, here's my crazy conspiracy theory," or "Here's my philosophical idea about household chores," and you're like, "Shut the fuck up! I'm trying."
It's like being forced to listen to a person who is high or listen to a person who is drunk when you are not.
There are
few experiences in life more unendurable than being sober and listening to a drunk person or a high person tell
especially a high person because
there's something about getting high.
They discovered something when they're talking.
There's something about a fucking pothead after he smoked up who he thinks he has unlocked the fucking secrets of the universe. And if you're not as high as he is, you have to sit there and listen to this fucking moron blabber on about this shit that he has convinced himself is like some really deep, important shit. And it's the dumbest fucking idea you've ever heard in your life.
That's kind of like
what this movie is.
So not recommend. Steve, recommend. Not recommend. Now do it. Do it now.
I think this is the perfect recommend to counteract this movie.
Okay.
It's by another independent filmmaker. In fact, it's probably by the independent filmmaker that, at least in terms of American film, was the biggest inspiration on people from Richard Linklater's generation. It's by Jim Jarmusch.
Oh, Jim Jarmusch. I like Jim Jarmusch.
And the movie I'm recommending is a Jim Jarmusch movie that was not made in a similar way as Slacker, but when you put it all together and watch it, it's similar format to Slacker. It's a movie from 2003, although it was shot over a much longer period of time and then collected, called Coffee and Cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
Coffee and Cigarettes is a series, basically a series of short films that Jim Jarmusch made over the years with various actors. And then he just kind of put them all together in one feature film and released it as Coffee and Cigarettes after having them be out there at various film festivals and stuff as their shorts. And it stars a whole bunch of people that you have actually heard of.
Tons of them, yeah.
Not like this movie. I mean, Bill Murray's in it, and Alfred Molina, and Cate Blanchett, and the White Stripes, and who else? Iggy Pop and Tom Waits. I think that's one of my favorite ones. And it's a series of little vignettes, usually involving one or two characters that meet each other, and they have a conversation over a cup of coffee or a piece of pie, or they're in a diner, or they're having a cup of tea or whatever. So it's similar to Slackers in that there's not really a plot. It's just disconnected, you know, meetings between characters. But the difference is, first of all, they're professional actors, so they know what they're doing. And most of the vignettes are really, really funny and are funny in different ways. Like there's a scene, the Alfred Molina one is Alfred Molina. He has lunch with Steve Coogan, and the conceit of their scene is that they've never actually met in person before, but Alfred Molina has discovered that they are distant cousins, and he's like really excited about this and wants to share it with Steve Coogan, who does not give a shit, who just could not care less about the fact that Alfred Molina is his cousin. And there's just something about the dynamic between them that is hilarious. The Iggy Pop and Tom Waits one, where Tom Waits casually reveals that he is, in addition to being a music legend, he's also a trained doctor who routinely delivers babies. And Iggy Pop is like, "What?" And Tom Waits is like, "Oh, yeah, I'm a doctor, you know, yeah." And there's, it's, It's really funny, and they're funny. Each thing is funny in its own unique way. It's not just 10 or 11 variations on the same scene. And also, it's shot in black and white. It's gorgeous to look at. So my recommendation, if you watch Slacker and you think, oh my God, you know, what can I do to wake myself up after sleeping through this movie, I would recommend Coffee and Cigarettes. There you go.
Okay, as you guys know, I like to recommend a film from the same year as the movie that just came out. I don't care what year it was. I don't remember. All I know is that another movie came out this year called Truly Madly Deeply, starring Alan Rickman as a ghost. So if you want to watch a little independent film with Alan Rickman, who's not trying to be scary, who's playing a ghost, then just watch that. He's a ghost that comes back and haunts his girlfriend and then reminds her about how annoying he was so she'll stop being sad and move on with her fucking life. And that's what the movie's about, Truly Madly Deeply. That's all I have to do. I don't have to talk 10 to 15 minutes like Steve does about some fucking movie
God
that
damn.
You're probably going to go see anyway.
I know. You're lashing out. You're taking it out on me. I understand.
I know. I'm making.
I understand.
Steve, now it's time for you to make a terrible choice. I've picked three movies. You're going to make them. You're going to make the choices we're going to watch. He has A, B, or C to choose which movie we're going to review next. And I promise you it's not going to be as bad as this last time.
Oh, boy.
Dave?
Yes, sir.
Please pick between A, B, or C.
I choose C.
All right, fine. It's fine.
This always happens.
Fine.
I always pick the one you don't want me to pick.
It's not the one that I wanted you to pick, but it's fine.
God damn it.
Had you chose A, we would have watched the classic 1953 War of the Worlds.
Ooh,
we're never gonna
yeah.
We're never gonna get to review it because you never pick it.
Sorry.
Had you chosen B, we'd watch the not quite so much classic When Worlds Collide.
Okay.
But you chose C. Arguably another one of the most famous, and boy oh boy, they have remade this movie and remade this movie and remade this movie. And one time they got pretty good, but this is the original one. The 1950s. Thriller, scary, sci-fi, ooh, super spooky. We're definitely not about, you know, being scared of the Russians movie. Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Yay! So, if you want to see that movie, Steve's busy typing something. I don't know what it is.
I'm writing it into my notes.
Oh, okay, that's great. So, if you want to get all the jokes or understand why Jason doesn't like seed pods, then please watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and that's it.
I don't trust him.
That's it. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. For late seating, this is Jason Harding, and go see a movie this week.
And this is Steve Shives, and remember, the passion for destruction is also a creative passion.
No, it's not.
And there you just offered more of a rebuttal than any of the characters in the film.
Rebuttal. No, it's not. Shut your fucking mouth. Can I drink my goddamn coffee, you fucking freak?
I mean, you can, because that was the old anarchist who said that, and like he's talking to the guy he caught robbing his house or whatever the fuck. And what I wouldn't have given for that guy to be like, all right, I know you caught me robbing your house and all, so I'm kind of in the hole here. But what the fuck are you talking about? You just got done telling me how fucking that one of the guys who assassinated the president was a good guy, and the fucking guy who shot whoever, however many people from the fucking tower of the university was like the greatest hero in history. What the fuck is the matter with you, man?
What are you talking about, you old fuck? You smell like Bengay. Do you not have any family members to annoy? Did you escape from a home? Are people looking for you? Just leave me alone.
Nobody's looking for that guy.
My moons over my hammy are getting cold. Fuck off. I spent my last $6 on this goddamn breakfast, and I don't need to hear from you. Go away. The end. Fuck off. We're done, Steve. We're done. I'm sorry, everybody who watched this.
Please forgive us.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Late Seating is a Let Me Listen podcast production featuring Steve Shives and Jason Harding.
produced by Jason Harding. Theme music, Rollin' at 5, composed and performed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find more Let Me Listen podcast productions at our website at www.letmelistenpodcast.com. You can also find us on Stitcher, iTunes, or just about anywhere you download podcasts. Late Seating is a listener-supported podcast. If you would like to support Late Seating or any of the other Let Me Listen productions for as little as $1 a month, please visit our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/lemmelisten. And thanks for listening.